Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings. Greetings to our listeners again. So Bunty, I thought for another episode today, just a shout out to someone who sent us a very, very nice email. Dr. Simon Combe. He's someone who has actually been involved with life in India for a long time, 20 years. Most recently, he's actually been a visiting professor at the School of Foreign Languages in Changchun Science Tech University in the Jilin Province, People's Republic of China. And, he sent us a very nice email saying he enjoys listening to the podcast. So first of all, Professor Combe, thank you very much. This is a labor of love for us. We don't have sponsorship. There are people who have occasionally reached out to us, but we want to be nonpartisan in a sense that we have our politics, but we are not affiliated with any party. We don't take corporate sponsorship of any kind when, we might talk about products. And we do this in our free time, and we do it as a kind of labor of love, and we do it to learn as much as to, and to discuss things, not really to like kind of speak down. So it's immensely gratifying that a well-informed person, an expert, feels that we have something to contribute. Dr. Combe, spent time when he did his master's and PhD actually doing research at the National Institute of Rural Development in Hyderabad in the 80s, Tata Institute of Social Sciences. And he actually visited almost all of Indian states at that point of time, working in the field of development. And he wanted us to talk. I mean, he said there's a couple of issues he'd be interested in hearing us talk about, which we've touched upon, as I told him, over 120 episodes, we've touched upon them, but maybe not in depth. The first was, he said that, the state of commentary in media, right? And as I told him that, we are much more vocal about that on our Twitter account, but just this yelling match, right, that every discussion ends in a brawl, the Arnab Goswami model. And the second point is how commentators, especially from the BJP, but, from other parties as well, to a lesser extent, maybe, they lapse back into Hindi, which, extending his argument is very interesting, because here you are speaking for a national audience. And in light of what Dr. Combe has said, very interesting that this sort of pre-budget or, this crypto budget or proto budget or whatever it is that Piyush Goyal presented much before time as an election stunt was in Hindi. And, everyone in the BJP, including people like Venkaiah Naidu, who are of, non-northern provenance themselves, seem to think that Hindi is some kind of national language. So let's have a brief chat on this.
First of all, Roy, just echoing your sentiments to Professor Combe, extremely generous, kind words. And I think the reason we wanted to kind of shout out to him is this is the kind of feedback that keeps us going, as Rohit was mentioning. But that said, I wanted to pick up on the two points he made. First, public discourse, particularly political discourse, how that turns into shouting matches in India, right? To be fair, I think that has happened in other parts of the world as well. The one thing I think I've noticed in television appearances, there is a plethora of experts who are rolled out, right? Whether or not there's vetted expertise, we do not know, right? So that's one of the first things. And the way these experts kind of make a living is they have to be seen to make very kind of noticeable points in very little time, right? And one of the things that happens in these kind of formats is if you've got seven people on a Skype call, by the time everybody's landed a relevant point, the central thread of the conversation is lost. And therefore, what remains is a shouting match. That's my first take on it. And an adjunct to that is, I think television appearances in India, the media training, the level of media training people have in Indian political parties is kind of very amateur. So what people do is get on board on a television program, and there's a lot of arms flailing about, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas what should happen is folks should land brief, sharp, pointed punches, right? Mm-hmm. And what you see on television is people flailing about with their arms and shouting loudly. So that's kind of my take on why this professed expertise and bad media training that leads to people presenting themselves the way they do. Mm-hmm. The second point, Rohit, Hindi kind of script. This is something that has happened off late, right? Mm. Where in a program designed for national consumption, which has kind of been labeled as English so that people in different parts of the country can understand, Hindi has been kind of a Hinglish version of the conversation takes center stage. Look, on that one, I can't, you know, if you're sitting in China or Australia or United States and watching the program, obviously you're at a natural disadvantage if you don't understand Hindi. But I think the point he's making is, why is Hindi becoming the default language for addressing the nation? Whereas and the pushback on that might be because Hindi is officially recognized as a national language, right?
But it isn't. We don't have a national language.
Correct. So this public perception of having Hindi as a national language has kind of made a linguistic project. That has kind of reared its head over the last 4 or 5 years, because I still remember that, you know, unless you specifically ask the interviewer that you're more comfortable expressing yourself in Hindi, the expectation was that if you've come to a panel show where people are speaking in English, you shouldn't try and get brownie points by kind of trying to come across as closer to the ground than you actually are. So I think that's a very political problematic thing, that, you know, on a program, if you're going to push designed for national consumption, you're essentially pushing out a northern Indian regional language. Those are my points. But I think the valid point of the first point, which I kind of understand and acknowledge a little bit more, this whole flailing about and not being media trained is a bit of a shambles.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I'm going to start with, you know, the language issue first. Like, the fact is that, look, there, you know, the Hindutva project, whether it's, you want to call it Hindutva in its, you know, broader historical sense, or you want to call it Neo-Hindutva, let's call it Neo-Hindutva to, just as a kind of shorthand to refer to the form that, you know, Hindu nationalist ideology has taken, I think, in Pax Modica, so to speak. You know, it's very much been this, you know, idea of creating a kind of overarching Hindu, caste Hindu, and I'd say significantly North Indian-oriented identity as the sort of model of authentic Indian identity. It's a hegemonic project. And Hindi, you know, has to occupy a kind of center stage there. So the idea is that the claim that's always made is that, you know, for instance, a Dalit who talks about discrimination at the hands of caste Hindus is being divisive. A Muslim who talks about, or a Christian who talks about facing religious discrimination at the hands of Hindus is being divisive. Of course, the opposite doesn't hold when, you know, caste Hindus who've been privileged talk about being oppressed. That is supposed to be, you know, in some ways a cry for justice, which supposedly the Congress has never let them carry out. And the idea, again, it's this, you know, insistence on taking, you know, a sort of very diverse, pluralistic culture and reducing it to a monoculture. Now, you know, pluralism in itself is, you know, maybe its virtues are exaggerated. Just because we are pluralistic doesn't mean we are superior. All cultures have a degree of diversity, even, you know, seemingly homogenous cultures. But, I mean, you just look at the it's a cliche about India which doesn't need any more stressing, right? We've had language riots in India, and one of the ways in which that was resolved was the three-language formula, that you have English, you have Hindi, and then you have a state regional language. And there is, you know, obviously value to that, because language is so fundamentally tied to notions of you know, cultural identity, collective identity, kin identity, group identity. So the, you know, this is just a way to kind of like, you know, make again, it's sort of one of the key planks of this Neo-Hindutva project, to consolidate and simplify Indian identity and to claim that, you know, it's the basis of unity, because that's the kind of rhetorical trope that the BJP keeps hopping on. And I think it's kind of doomed. The you know, when it's raised explicitly, the idea is that it lets the right-wingers sort of point fingers at anyone who accuses them of imposing Hindi as being, oh, you're anti-national, right? It's one more thing you can call people anti-national for. But
yeah.
I think Dr. Combe is right that, you know, the tacit assumption is so offensive that if you want to understand, whether it's, you know, NDTV, whether it's Z, they all claim implicitly to speak to a national audience, right? So if that is the implicit claim, that you're talking to a national audience and you're reaching a national viewership, the idea is that if you want to participate in this national debate, you have to know Hindi. And that's, I think, a deeply problematic and offensive claim. And yeah, I mean, on Arnab, you know, that shouting, I think that's a model that was introduced by Arnab Goswami. I think we had an episode earlier where we mentioned that, you know, there's allegedly all kinds of like weird personal politics that went on in Star TV or NDTV. Arnab moved to Times. He apparently hates Rajdeep and he wanted to bring Rajdeep down. And that's when this yelling and screaming started, either with, you know, the suggestion of or with the tacit blessings of the Jain brothers who run Times now. But it's very odd because, you know, a person who's the host of a debate, the moderator or the host, he's supposed to calm things down when panelists yell at each other. Here, the host himself is yelling, boss. So when the host himself is yelling, then, you know, I don't know if you've heard that, you know, very famous song sung by Kishore, beautiful song, Chingari Koi Bharke. And, you know, it's the lyrics are by Gulzar. It ranks with the greatest of poems in my view. I'm actually writing about it in a book right now, among other things. And the idea there is that, you know, he starts by saying that, you know, when, you know, it's like one of the metaphors is that, you know, the boatman, if you're like in a boat, and Naya Dole, if the boat rocks, then Maji, that the boatman is the one who steadies it. But if the boatman himself is toppling the boat, you know, who the hell is going to steady it, right? And I've paraphrased it in very crude and non-poetic terms with apologies to Gulzar.
But at least you didn't slip into Hindi because, you know, you set the example that it's possible to convey ideas for everybody's consumption.
Yeah. Even when
it's originally expressed in Hindi. Now, I think the last point that I wanted to make on this is the way Indian television has, or news television has emerged over the last 10 years is that, you know, it is kind of personality driven, right?
Right.
And the way, they're almost trying to take the Fox network model of, you know, so Fox CNN way, where, you know, people, it's the people reading the auto cues who become the superstars. And an auto cue is an auto cue boss. So at the end of the day, the only way you'll get noticed on top of that is if you create some hangama around it. And, you know, people have started making a living around that, which is, you know, style of journalism, which kind of does public debate and discussion much harm. And then there's the counterpoint is the Rajat Sharma school, which is like, you know, snake in the grass kind of, you know, I will smile creepily which is kind of those Chanakya Panti is also a low ball way of doing it. So I'm looking forward to the day where television journalism takes on the quality of, you know, decent pragmatic, like you would have a conversation in an honest, transparent manner, not willing to trip people up.
Just
have the conversation as it should be. We've gone on about this, Rohit, for a while. So on that note, and again to a shout out to Professor Simon Coombs, I'd like to wrap up from my end, Rohit. Over to you for last comments.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. And for me, you know, one of the things is that, and I don't think, and I'm not saying Professor Combe is saying this, he's not saying this at all, but one of the things I often hear people saying is that, you know, we should, in these shows or in our public debates, we should try and find common ground, you know, we should come to agreement. And no, not at all, not at all. I mean, I think it's perfectly fine to have permanent disagreement. It's perfectly fine to, you know, not even agree to disagree. Let us just disagree flat out, boss. It's totally okay. You know, let there be the guy. I have no problems with, you know, the Hindu fundamentalist who says there should be Akhand Bharat. And I have no problems with the Muslim fundamentalist who says that we should impose Sharia and, we should revive the caliphate. As long as, boss, neither of them is trying to chop my head off. And neither of them is stopping me from saying that, no, India needs to be a secular country and I want to live by the constitution. Let's have these diverse views, but let's express them without yelling. You know, barring people who come and give each other death threats and yell at each other or slap each other, let's really have a range of, you know, the widest possible views, which are just expressed. I mean, let people know the fringe also. And I think that if you have a culture where you actually let everyone speak, you won't legitimize the fringe by giving them like the opportunity to speak, but you then have to have a range of other voices also. So that's, you know, my understanding. And I think, yeah, I mean, if you had people who actually were trained in this, I think it's a very, very interesting point you make about media training. And I think that it speaks to also a wider need in our society for, you know, I'm biased here, I'm a professor of media studies, but I do think there's a case to be made that, you know, starting, especially now with social media, more so than ever, that, you know, maybe starting in middle school or something, that one of the subjects that in which students can should be educated is just basic media literacy.
Right.
So, those are my final thoughts too.
Chalo, let's wrap up on that. Chalo,
okay,
take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.